NRA-TV with Cam Edwards.
I am here today. We are standing outside of the NRA headquarters to say enough is enough. We have a plan to end gun violence. This issue is not about the NRA, but they're in the way.
That is Eric Swalwell trying to get some attention for his flailing presidential campaign. I think you actually saw him with every one of his Virginia supporters here just earlier today outside of the NRA's headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. Good Monday to you. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, Eric Swalwell says that none of the gun control proposals that he laid out today would actually infringe on your right to keep and bear arms at all. I want you to listen. Now, we've condensed all of Eric Swalwell's rhetoric into about 2.5 minutes, but this lays out every single actual idea that Eric Swalwell put forth today. Take a listen.
Just happen to believe we don't have to live this way. And if we get this right in the White House and with the next Congress, we won't. And so I want to tell you what our plan does. First, we start and we look at this through the life cycle of a firearm and where we ultimately hope it's used for sport, for hunting, and in the worst imaginable cases, protecting yourself if necessary. There's nothing that we propose here today that is at odds with what this organization claims they stand for. Keep your pistols, keep your rifles, keep your shotguns. But we happen to believe that we can do more to take the most dangerous weapons out of the hands of the most dangerous people. Starting with what weapons are manufactured and who's responsible when a dangerous weapon is put into our streets. We want to lift the shield of liability that is put on place today and protects manufacturers from having any responsibility when their weapons are used because of either a design default or something that they intentionally put on a weapon that makes us less safe. We also believe that it is time to ban and buy back every single assault weapon, making sure, first and foremost, no more assault weapons are manufactured in the future, but also with a plan to buy back the 15 million that are in circulation in our communities today. At the point of sale for a firearm, first, we believe any person who purchases a firearm should have to undergo a licensing procedure. We also put in place additional restrictions at the point of sale on ammunition, as well as requiring insurance. We also believe every person that buys a firearm should go through a background check, not just at a dealership, but at a gun show, from private seller to private buyer. So we've created red flag intervention opportunities so that our law enforcement can protect a victim of domestic violence from a firearm that may be in the house. So that means having a national firearms database. That is not too much to ask, and that would only be used to protect all of us.
All right, so here we go. You've got a sweeping gun ban. He says it's taking the most dangerous weapons out of the hands of the most dangerous people. It's actually banning the most commonly sold rifle in America today and taking them out of the hands of every American, right? Then avoiding the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act as well, completely misrepresented. That legislation, by the way, gun licensing, he says some sort of national license. He didn't get specific there. Restrictions on ammunition, requiring insurance. I don't know if you picked up on that, but if you're a gun owner, you would have to have some sort of federally mandated insurance, quote-unquote universal background checks, what he described as red flag opportunities, probably incentivizing states to adopt red flag firearm laws, and then a national firearms database. So licensing, registration, and gun bans. But hey, none of those things infringe on your right to keep and bear arms because Eric Swalwell says so. Now, John Popp from NRA TV was there for Eric Swalwell's presser earlier today. In fact, John is still there in Fairfax, Virginia. John, appreciate you coming on the program, sir.
Cam, my reaction was almost the same as yours. As I heard him lay out his program, I said to myself, wow, what part of this doesn't affect a lawful, legal gun owner? It was, I'd say, draconian in scope was probably the first way I would use to describe his plan. It's, wow, a lot going on there.
Yeah, I mean, everything short of nuking American gunners. And, you know, he probably doesn't want to talk about that too much while the microphones are live. No. But, you know, as you note, each and every one of these proposals is aimed at restricting what legal, law-abiding American gun owners can do. Right? You can own that gun, but now you can't own that gun. Now you've got to get a license. Now you've got to register your firearms. Now you've got to have all of these checks on ammunition. None of these bills, none of these proposals, I should say, are aimed anywhere near perpetrators of violent crime, the gang members in our society, those who are in illegal possession of a firearm. I mean, Eric Swalwell really seems to believe that the way to go about reducing violent crime is to make it legally dangerous to exercise your Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, and Cam, as you opened the show, you played that soundbite of him saying that the NRA is in the way. Thank goodness the NRA and the Second Amendment is in the way of these proposals, because, wow, I mean, someone's got to be there for, as I said before, the lawful, legal gun owners, and that's the NRA to do it.
Well, you know, again, he had about 10 supporters behind him. There are about 5.5 million members of the NRA in opposition to Eric Swalwell. And hopefully those numbers are going to be growing, because even though Eric Swalwell is polling somewhere between 0 and 1% these days, you know, sadly, the ideas that he is touting, I would not be shocked, whoever the ultimate nominee is for the Democrats, I would not be shocked to see them adopt policies that are virtually identical to what we heard from Eric Swalwell today.
Yeah, and Cam, with so many different Democratic candidates in the disarmament primary talking different gun control and anti-gun measures, you're right. It's almost like a contest to the top to see who can kind of top each other. So it is. Yeah, we've got to pay as gun owners and Second Amendment supporters have to pay careful attention to all these different proposals from all these different candidates.
Absolutely. John Popp on the scene there in Fairfax, Virginia. Glad you survived without getting nuked, John. Appreciate you coming on the program, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon. In Michigan, a local a TV station went out to a gun store, Freedom Firearms, talked to the owner, one of the customers there, about their take on what is shaping up to be the 2020 Democratic disarmament primary.
We need to just start from a perspective of respecting that I have a difference of opinion, but first of all, we're Americans. And the right to bear arms is for everybody.
The side that comes out first is usually the anti-gun side. Why? Because the Second Amendment's already in place. So this position is firm and solid. It's not going anywhere. This side is what's trying to change that.
You know, unfortunately, you've got individuals who, A, don't think it's a right, and so, B, they don't treat it as if it's a right. And they're going to do everything that they can to make sure that it's not seen as a right by the law, by lawmakers, by, you know, regulatory agencies. I agree with that gun owner who said, you know, we need to recognize that we're Americans. I recognize, frankly, that gun control supporters are Americans. They're the ones who want to demonize us. They're the ones who want to call us terrorists. They're the ones who want to say that we're un-American for standing up for our right to keep and bear arms. I'm more than happy to have a conversation with any gun control advocate or activist. And it'll be a real conversation. I won't yell or scream or call them names or anything. They don't want to have, they can't say the same thing. They have to otherize you. They have to demonize you. That is what their game plan relies on. Trying to demonize the millions of NRA members, the tens of millions of lawful, law-abiding American gun owners, because their entire effort hinges on making non-gun-owning Americans afraid of you and afraid of their Second Amendment rights. Meanwhile, in Baltimore City, the Fraternal Order of Police tweeted out a couple of days ago something that should really scare a lot of people. From last Friday to today, and this was on June 14th, there have been 13 murders, 15 shootings. This year to date, there have been 141 murders compared to 122 murders on the same date last year in Baltimore, Maryland. The state that passed the Firearm Safety Act back in 2013, the state that has, quote-unquote, universal background checks, the state that has a, quote-unquote, assaults ban, the state that has may issue concealed carry, so nobody in Baltimore City is lawfully carrying a firearm. Again, back in 2013, gun control advocates presented their wish list to lawmakers, and they got everything on their list in Maryland. Since then, we've had 1 year where homicides in Baltimore have been below 300. In 2017, the city of Baltimore had an all-time high per capita homicide rate. Again, 4 years after passing these massive gun control proposals, not one of these disarmament Democrats will acknowledge that gun control hasn't worked in Baltimore. If they even bother to acknowledge what's happening in Baltimore, they would simply say, well, this just proves the need for federal legislation. Here to talk about what's going on, our friend Rob O'Donnell from Brothers Before Others. Rob, how are you, sir?
Doing very well, Cam.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. You know, again, you can see the frustration in that tweet by the Baltimore Fraternal Order of Police. These officers who are out there on the street each and every day trying to bring down that crime rate. And, you know as well as I do, all of the issues that Baltimore has had. I think, you know, with the last three mayors have had to resign. You've had a police commissioner had to resign because he didn't pay his taxes. I mean, this is a dysfunctional city in many, many ways. And so there's a lot wrong with Baltimore. But I got to tell you, these gun control laws being on the books don't seem to be helping anything, Rob.
No, absolutely not. You know, just a few weeks ago, you had several hundred juveniles running through the streets, robbing, assaulting, and stealing from people. Do you think they would do that if they knew that a portion of that population had firearms to protect themselves? And they were written off as just youths being youths. Unfortunately, it is a hopeless cause until the leadership in these cities change. Name the city: Baltimore, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York. After we gained all that ground in New York, you know, look how much it's lost and how the crime is starting to skyrocket in certain areas of the city. You know, when the results are telling you one thing and you still want to stick to the same plan, it's just madness. And until these voters hold these politicians accountable, get rid of them, and get people with a plan in there that are willing to make the tough decisions, this is going to continue. It's just, you know, outrageous how these, you know, in Chicago, you know, in addition to Baltimore, you just had 53 individuals arrested for gun crime this past weekend alone, and 30 of them were released already. That's what's going on in these cities. You know, they want to tout more gun crime, more gun control. They want to tout more gun laws. Let's get the federal laws involved because ours aren't strong enough. They're not enforcing the laws they have already. Their crime is skyrocketing, and their citizens are in the crosshairs because these cowardice politicians and police leadership that don't have the backbones to do their job and tell the people there's laws and we're going to enforce them, this is going to continue.
You know, and the sad thing is there's a spillover effect because of the population centers. You know, Baltimore dominates Maryland politics, just like Chicago dominates Illinois politics. So it's not even a matter of these bad ideas staying confined to Baltimore or to Illinois or to Chicago. You know, throughout the state, you've got folks who are hampered and hindered from being able to protect themselves because of this outsized influence from these big municipalities that are, again, completely crime-ridden and going about it the wrong way if you want to try to reduce violent crime. You know, as you say, though, it's tough. I'm not going to say it's a hopeless cause, but I do think that this is one of the reasons why we're seeing things like the Second Amendment sanctuary resolutions being adopted in, you know, so many downstate Illinois counties. Even in Western Maryland, I've heard that they're debating a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. It seems to me like this is another way of these folks outside of the big cities of saying, hey, listen, stop it. You're not going to reduce, you're not going to make your city safer by taking away my rights here.
Yeah, the double-edged sword there, as these people fear for their lives in these cities and move elsewhere, they're bringing their politics with them, and they're watering down that staunch line that says, you know, I should be able to defend myself, my family should be able to defend myself, and our police, local police, should be able to defend us. So that's a double-edged sword, you know, as these cities around these metropolitan areas are standing up for themselves and saying, not here. You know, you also have the people that are fleeing these cities, but also taking their politics with them, watering down, you know, that Second Amendment and self-protection rights that we have.
Talking again with a friend, Rob O'Donnell from Brothers Before Others. Rob, listen, I appreciate everything you do, sir. Thank you so much for coming on the program, and I look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, Cam. And again, until the voters start holding these leaderships accountable, these things aren't going to change in these cities.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think, Rob, you are correct. I hate to say that because I am, generally speaking, an optimist. Here's the thing. I can't say it's hopeless. But as Rob says, this change is going to have to come from the residents of these cities. It's going to have to come from within. And there are some grassroots activists who are out there working, trying to enact that change. But it is an uphill fight. In Georgia, Bardo County Sheriff Clark Millsap recently telling residents there that they need to get armed. There was recently a murder-suicide, and the sheriff was talking about this at a community meeting. And he said, this weekend that guy showed up in Bardo County. The male victim didn't do too good in returning fire here. Said that everybody in the attendance at this church function should not only get a firearm, but a Georgia carry license to accompany it. It says, if you don't have one, please go and get one. And one of the reasons why he said this is because of the lack of manpower there at the sheriff's office. They've got, as of last report, 19 open positions there at the Bardo County Sheriff's Office right now. And this is not, by the way, unusual. You know, it's been more than a decade since the Great Recession, but a lot of counties, particularly rural counties, have not recovered in terms of their budgets. And so, it can happen in some, big cities in, some populated counties, but particularly when you get in rural areas, you've got county sheriffs that are struggling right now to provide 24-hour coverage where there's a deputy on patrol 24 hours a day. I know of many counties across the country where that is simply not the case anymore. From, let's say, 11 p.m. until 6 a.m., you've got a deputy on call, but they're not out there on the road. They're not patrolling. And if you've got that type of situation, it just, to me, really brings home the fact that, it is up to us. We are our own first responders. If you're able to get to that phone, if you're able to make that 911 call, I do believe that law enforcement's going to get there as quickly as they possibly can. But I also know for a fact that that could be a while. We had that story, 2 weeks ago, down in Florida. Guy trying to get into a woman's home. She calls 911. Thankfully, she had a firearm. She ends up holding this guy at gunpoint. Neighbor comes over, helps her hold him at gunpoint because it took almost a half hour for police to respond to that call of somebody trying to break into someone's home. So again, the sheriff there in Bardo County, Clark Millsap, urging residents to get armed and to stay armed. Let's get to our hero of the day, unless we, I think we're having some trouble connecting with our next guest. So we'll see if we can get Aaron Paulette from Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols on the program later this week. Wanted to talk with Aaron about the third year anniversary of Operation Blazing Sword, which was established in the days after the Pulse nightclub shooting and has grown over the past 3 years to be a resource that has well over 1,000. I think, in fact, last time I talked to Aaron, it's over 1,400 individuals who have volunteered to provide at no cost or expense to anybody who wants to get it, a basic firearms education. You don't have to be a member of the LGBT community, but this is sort of geared towards those individuals. And this anniversary comes to the day that Billy McLaughlin, who is the NRA's social media manager, had a piece at the Washington Post today talking about, as a gay gun owner, feeling that disrespect from within the LGBT community, and not necessarily feeling it from gun owners, which is something, by the way, that we've talked about on this program a number of times before. Sadly, it seems like if you are a gay gun owner, a member of the LGBT community, and you're a Second Amendment supporter, that can be cause for a shunning. Our friend Chris Cheng talked about when he worked in the world of tech in Silicon Valley and came out as a gun owner. That was seen as much more of a controversial thing than when Chris came out as gay. So I want to continue this conversation. I hope that we're able to connect with Aaron Paulette later on in the week, because I do think that that is a topic that is worth exploring. But let's get to our hero of the day, as well as our deal of the day. Hero of the day from WLTX in Columbia, South Carolina, Eastover, South Carolina. Richland County deputies right now looking for a suspect who they say tried to rob a restaurant, actually was thwarted by the restaurant manager. 35-year-old Anthony James Summers went to a restaurant in Eastover, South Carolina back on June the 3rd. He had plans to rob the place. He threatened the manager as she was closing up. She got startled, apparently, and she dropped whatever it was that she was holding. And then as he grabbed her stuff, she pulled her firearm. How about that? And again, the presence of that firearm apparently was enough to stop this crime from proceeding any further. She did fire a shot. He took off running. Don't know if he was hit or not. Again, police still looking for Anthony Summers. Anybody who knows of his whereabouts has to call Crime Stoppers. And that restaurant manager, again, we don't even know the name of the restaurant. So I don't know if this is a chain restaurant. I don't know if this is a mom or pop place. Hopefully this manager still has a job after using a firearm to protect herself. Sadly, we know that that might not be the case, depending on where this woman was working. But I'd like to think and hope that nobody in their right mind is going to fire somebody for defending their life while they are at work. Our good guy of the day, brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher from Channel 13 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Lake County, Michigan. Kyle Poblisky is a conservation officer with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and he helped to save a life over the weekend. He was the first responder when he found a 30-year-old woman clinging to a tree. She had fallen into the river. She had been kayaking, did not know how to swim, which I have to say, just as an aside, if you don't know how to swim, I would not recommend kayaking. That's just me. But she was there in the water. She fell out of the kayak. She fell into the water. She had been in the water actually for about 45 minutes when Kyle Poblisky found her and was exhibiting signs of hypothermia. Poblisky said with the river water's level being very high, swift currents, cold water temperatures made the situation more difficult. She was not wearing a life jacket. Again, another no-no when you're kayaking. Poblisky created a lifeline. He tossed a throw bag to the woman and told her to wrap the rope under her arms because she couldn't feel her hands. So she had to, you know, just kind of use her hands like they were clubs. And then around her torso, she was able to grab the rope. He threw her a life jacket, but she could only get one arm through it. At that point, there were other first responders that showed up, thankfully, from the U.S. Forest Service, law enforcement, as well as the Lake County Sheriff's Department. They arrived and they were able to assist Officer Poblisky. The woman let go of the tree that she was clinging to. She went downstream. She became entangled on a different log, thankfully, before she went under. And that is when Officer Poblisky said, to heck with all this. And he jumped into that water. And he swam to her. Was able to get her untangled from the log and then safely to shore. He said, from the time that I arrived at the river until the time that we were able to get the woman safely to shore is only about 6 to 7 minutes total. Woman exhibited, again, the extreme signs of hypothermia. She was unable to walk. They were able to carry her about a quarter mile where an ambulance was waiting, transported to a local hospital, treated for hypothermia. Officer Poblisky has been with the Michigan DNR since 2004. The head of the DNR Law Enforcement Division said Officer Kyle Poblisky made a quick decision to enter the river to help this woman, risking his own life to save her. And that's absolutely right. Chief Gary Hagler said conservation officers receive extensive water training and are prepared to respond to situations like this. So I'm glad that Poblisky and the other law enforcement agencies were able to help in what could have been a tragic situation. So Officer Kyle Poblisky of the Michigan DNR in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank you very much for being one of the many good guys out there. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Cam and Company. We will see you back here tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern time, with all of the day's latest Second Amendment news and information. Stick around. Relentless with Dana Lash is coming up right after this.